And we are, as a people, inherently and historically
wake up.
Opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Welcome to Conspiracy Queries again. Thank you for coming back. I'm Alan Park, and what a week it's been. I could say that every week, because there's always something going on every week that we can talk about. But there's only so much time in the day. There's only so many days in the year, and I haven't gotten to the point yet. We're going to talk about a few things. I'm going to be going back to my Cass Sunstein work paper, I'll call it, his abstract, this piece that he wrote in 2008 and then claims not to recall writing it. So we're going to talk about him some more. And the reason I'm going back to this, and I'm going to dip into this over the next several shows, broadcasts, is that it's so well written from the point of view of a government that is trying to oppress any outside theory or anything outside of the norm, and to have anybody believing anything outside the norm to portray themselves as obviously someone who's insane. That is what they're looking for. So we'll talk about that. We can also talk about the fact that, I mean, I don't know when you're listening to this because it's recorded. But we may not have an economy at this point. You may be listening to this. You might have downloaded it from inside a Libby's soup tin if you were able to afford that. Do they have soup? Do Libby's maybe more of a bean tin imagery? Maybe Campbell's soup is what I'm talking about. Half a can of salt, Campbell's soup. And we're going to get into food a little bit later as well. Because food is something we all eat. Don't tell yourself you don't. You know that you do. All right. And then we will wrap things up with something else. I'm not sure where we're going to go yet. This is kind of stream of consciousness. And sometimes there's a worker, you know, when you're driving and those guys with the orange signs, especially in springtime in Toronto, and everything's going really well. And then all of a sudden, nothing's going really well, and then you realize they've decided it's a good time to put traffic cones all over the place, and things slow down a little bit. Maybe I should start drinking coffee. I'm not sure. I have one the odd time, but I'm not a regular binge drinker of the coffee. And I think a lot of conspiracy theorists, not that I am one, drink a lot of coffee or are portrayed to be pretty jittery. All right, let's move into this Cass Sunstein PDF. And before we do, just before I kick this off, let me say that if you're trying to follow along with my crazy thought patterns at this point, as they've been pointed out to me by so many people, that I'm crazy. And then they say, you're crazy, you should go on the radio. So I don't know what that says for most people that are already on the radio. That they're already crazy, or that they're not crazy enough and therefore not worth listening to. I don't know what that means. But let me jump to the point here. Conspiracyqueries.com is actually up now, and we're starting to put in the content that matches what's going on in the broadcast, in the podcast. I love the way they rhyme. And you can follow along, and I'm going to have this Conspiracy Theories by Cass Sunstein PDF up there, and you can read it for yourself. Now, fear not, I will not be dissecting every page of this 30-page screed against thinking, but I am going to spend a little bit more time with it over the next few podcasts just to show you what I think we're up against. So I was into it last show, and let's just recap quickly that Cass writes, conspiracy theories are by no means a strictly domestic phenomenon. that can be, they can easily be found all over the world. Among sober-minded Canadians, just the people that don't drink, so that's not a lot of people here. Among sober-minded Canadians, a September 2006 poll found that 22% believe that the attacks on the United States on September 11, 2001 had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden and were actually a plot by influential Americans. Can you believe that? 22% of people didn't believe the official story in 2006, which I think is an extraordinary improvement over day one on September 11 and September 12, when almost everyone believed what was going on that day. And I still can't get my head around the notion that on the day that it happened, no one in an official capacity seemed to have any clue. And by the time dinner was down, they all knew exactly what happened. They all knew who it was, how it was orchestrated, and within days had the names and the passports of some, and their entire history was instantly available at their fingertips. Oh, if they'd only known the day before that quickly. They just had no clue whatsoever that these were the people involved. These 19 hijackers, most of them from Saudi Arabia. So obviously we were bound to attack Iraq. Yeah, 22% of people don't believe that. I would say that that has climbed. More recently, there was a poll on CNN based in Atlanta, I believe, that at least 33% of Americans didn't believe it. So basically, I think what's happening is over time, more and more people don't believe the official story because there's more disinformation and misinformation that just seems to stack up to nothing. And, you know, the truth is still not out there. Now, again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. That's why the show is called Conspiracy Queries. I really don't have a theory. I do have a lot of questions, but conspiracy questions seem really boring. And the phrase conspiracy queries, I found out subsequently, is out there. I didn't coin it, but nobody else put it into a website, you know what I mean, and wrapped up a podcast around it. So there's nothing new under the sun. So if you invented the phrase conspiracy queries and you're listening to this now on the radio, what can I say? Don't be so paranoid. I didn't steal it from you. I'm just asking questions about things that need to be found out. So anyhow, back to this page of the, which I think is an encouraging situation, that more people disbelieve what they're being spoon-fed by their precious government. And when I say the American government, I mean I'm equally blaming every government because it seems like the American government put this line out and everyone else just jumped into position so quickly that, you know, there's no question to be asked and you're a ludicrous and a lunatic for even considering that there may be an alternative to the official story. There it is, the backbone of this show once again. So in any case, let's move on with this. So was it Osama bin Laden? In a poll conducted in seven Muslim countries, 78% of respondents said they do not believe the 9/11 attacks were carried out by Arabs. Now, admittedly, that's going to be a little biased towards, the Arabs, the Arabian people, the Arab people, the Arab nation. Oh, my God, I've already I've broken like four politically fucking correct rules before I got rolling with this. Of course, it's going to be a little skewed their way. But, you know, somewhere in the middle, maybe not 78%, but maybe like 50% of people recognize a fiction such as the official story when they see it. The most popular account in those countries, or it says in these countries, but I wanted to emphasize, is that 9/11 was the work of the U.S. or Israeli governments. That is just unbelievable that anything such as the U.S. government working against its own people for any reason, unprecedented, ridiculous, unless you look at all of the evidence for them doing stuff like that in the past. There's the document, the Northwoods document, where they were trying to convince the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Or is it Joint's Chief of Staff? I always screw up my plurals. Did you ever get that with the Governor Generals? No, it's the Governor's General. I don't know. There needs to be a plural book for dummies for me to get through this. But these guys were, where the hell was I? I was pluralizing something, and so I know I was talking about more than one thing. That's probably what threw me off. Bish is looking at me, our engineer is like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm wearing pink earphones today. Are those the breast cancer earphones?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, they are pink. They're the first pair of pink headphones. I know my daughter would like that pair of headphones if you can part with them when you get an upgrade.
Okay. I know you were talking about Northwoods.
So. I was talking about Northwoods. Thank you for getting me back on track of the account of the Operation Northwoods. So the Joint's Chief of Staff, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, these guys that sit around and put large-scale Costco-size orders into the military purveyors like Boeing and those companies, they presented a plan to President Kennedy that what they should probably do is attack their own people, crash some planes into buildings, and then blame it on the Cubans. And bingo, you got your reason for a war. So you have that already memorialized. General Lemnitzer, I believe his name was, who was the point man on this effort. And Kennedy giving the world yet one more reason for him to be killed, turned them down. And they did not attack American buildings and people using American planes and blame it on the Cubans. So you can throw that into the soup pot of the ingredients of why Kennedy was assassinated. I don't know which one it was, but there were so many. Anyhow, that didn't happen. A lot of other things have happened, too. I won't spend too much time on that right now. But there's one. There's one right there. The Gulf of Tonkin incident that triggered the Vietnam War is two. And I said I was going to stop at one, and I gave you one more. That's what I like to do sometimes. I'm like, wow, I've already got my one whole reason that he's talking about. And then he said he was finished with that. And then he gave me another reason. So now you're doubly filled up reason-wise. All right, back to Cass's scholarly work. What causes such theories to arise and spread? Well, I think I've already covered that. Are they important and perhaps even threatening or merely trivial and even amusing? That is what is known as a completely skewed question. Are they important and perhaps threatening? And from his point of view, I believe if you read the entire paper, he's coming at it from important as in we should know that people don't believe the official story and therefore they are threatening to our paper doll dictatorship. Are they important and perhaps even threatening or merely trivial and amusing? So those are the two possibilities at the beginning of the paper that Cass is laying out a conspiracy theory to be, which tells you right there this isn't being handled in a fair and even-handed matter. If those are your two choices, those aren't choices. Now, they are important, and they should be threatening, because when you realize what the truth is, when we all eventually, hopefully one day, and that's my hope, that's my dream, and I know it probably won't happen, but one day I would love to know, and love us all to know, what these truths are, these sinister snakes of evil just weaving their ways into the backbone of our, hey, we're just people trying to live our lives. You know, why are you trying to screw us over? So it is important for them to realize that, as we've learned earlier, there has been an increase in the years since the 9/11 attack of people realizing they're being lied to. So yes, it is important, and hopefully it is threatening to the paradigm of control that they currently exercise, or merely trivial and amusing. Now, I'll give you that. Hopefully some of this broadcast is amusing. Hopefully you enjoy some of it. I'm trying to come at this with a level of irreverence. So it's not very, it's not jokes every 5 seconds, that's for sure. And I'm just trying to hit on a topic that I think needs more exposure. And so some people could consider that to be trivial. That's why we had to get sequestered into an odd category on iTunes. I'm not sure. It's not a comedy show. It's not a history show. I don't know what you want to call it. But, hey, I'm breaking open a new barrier here. Great. let me just take a sip of the tea, the pause that refreshes. And if you're a tea purveyor, all right, yeah, you could be looking at a potential sponsorship here. I'm gonna go out there and slut myself up for a little tea vendor action. Here we go. Listen to how delicious this sounds. Oh, my God. Did you hear that? Oh, man, that is great. I've also got some raw honey in there. Not that Billy B liquid wax crap that Starbucks, the occasional Starbucks, the upscale Starbucks will leave out for you. You ever get a Starbucks coffee and then just go to town with it? Just take in, you know, you put in that, they put that vanilla powder there. I don't know where that's from. I don't know if it's real vanilla, but I've tried this before. You pour that in and you pour in the cinnamon and you pour in the nut. We just like do it up like a $3 whore. And by the time it's finished, there's this big like inch pile of sludge at the bottom. And I don't know what I'm doing with that, but I will stir that up when there's a little bit left and just chug it back like it's some pre-melted liquid chocolate delicious treat. That's the commercial for Starbucks that you're never going to hear from Starbucks. All right, so yes, yeah, so those are the false question that Cass asks. Is it important and perhaps threatening? I hope yes, or merely trivial and amusing. What can and should government do about them? Well, you could get the fuck out of our lives for starters. Try that. If you haven't had a crack at that yet, now's the time. Okay. We aim here to sketch some psychological and social mechanisms that produce, sustain, and spread these theories to show that some of them are quite important and should be taken seriously, and to offer suggestions for governmental responses, both as a matter of policy and as a matter of law. Right. So basically, this is the velvet glove coming off of the iron fist that they're ready to crash down upon your head if you entertain the notion that they could be spinning a false story. The academic literature on conspiracy theories is thin, and most of it falls into one of two classes. One, work by analytic philosophers, especially in epistemology and the philosophy of science, that asks what counts as a conspiracy theory and whether such theories are methodologically suspect. And two, I know, it's just a mouthful of crazy, and we're the ones that are supposed to be nuts. Number two, a smattering of work in sociology. I love anytime you can get the word smattering into your argument, it just brings it into a cozy sort of setting. So that's, I support Cass in his use of that. A smattering of work in sociology and Freudian psychology on the causes of conspiracy theorizing. Both approaches have proved illuminating. Ding, 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 ding. There's the magic word hidden inside the document. The Illuminati, right in there. And you know what that means? It means nothing. But I find it fascinating that that word is strategically placed right after his reasons as to why conspiracy theory information is thin. Because I will stop to say right now, a lot of conspiracy theories, a lot of people that propagate conspiracy theories are propagating crazy theories deliberately and on purpose to muddy the waters. Because the nuttier things are, and the more someone can be pointed to as a tinfoil hat wearer, which, by the way, I've never owned one, but I'm looking into it. anybody that comes up with that kind of theory is to be painted as a nut job. That is the main focus of their work. All right, where were we here? The former, because the conceptual questions are both less tractable and less interesting than the social and institutional ones. The latter, because it neglects newer work in social psychology and behavioral economics. Behavioral economics. Probably do a whole show on that. Both of which shed light on the causes of conspiracy theorizing. Rather than engaging with conceptual debates, we will proceed in an eclectic fashion and mostly from the ground up, hewing close to real examples and the policy problems they pose. So just to wrap that up in a nutshell, the policy problems they pose is, as soon as you realize that most of their what they're saying is nonsense, then it's over. If you're playing a game of Monopoly with somebody and they've got all a series of different rules that you don't have, like if they say, yeah, then when I trade in my houses and get a hotel, I actually get two hotels, and you don't get to trade in any of your houses on the first time around the board when you have enough houses to trade in. I mean, it's a completely skewed board all the way across. So I think I'll leave that for now, the Cass Sunstein paper. Please do go to conspiracyqueries.com and have a read of it yourself. And I might throw a plug in here. This is going to sound like a plug, but it's not a plug because I don't make any money from this. I don't derive any income, and I'm not affiliated with the company I'm about to mention. But sometimes when you're reading crap like this and things that you feel like you have to read as opposed to things that you want to read, let me recommend to you a fantastic website. It's called Spreeder.com. Spreeder. I don't know if you've come across this. It's amazing. S-P-R-E-E-D-E-R, Spreeder.com. And what you can do there is take text from a PDF or anything from any website, and you can drop it in there, and you can set the dials, set the controls to the heart of the sun. And what you can do is control how many words per minute you're going to read and the size of the cluster. If it's a one word at a time, which that's where I started with it. And then I've sort of grown along the way to use 5 or 7 words per cluster, which sometimes encompasses an entire sentence. And you can set the speed of how many words per minute you're reading. And it'll just throw it out at you on the screen, and you can you take it in. You understand it. It makes sense. You have to learn how to drop the internal voice that a lot of us have. I used to have this when you read, not aloud, but when you're reading a book. You know, you tend to actually verbalize it in your mind. Do you know what I mean? It's hard when you don't answer me, but I understand why that is. So don't take it personally. But you internalize the words, so you're actually, it's almost like you're reading with your mouth. Well, you're reading, you're speaking it along as it goes. You got to learn to stop doing that and just look at the text coming at you. And if it takes a couple of tries, I don't think it'll take you very long to pick up the skill of this. It's really fun. Just go now to the Spreeder.com and grab anything. They have a sample text on there, but it's pretty boring about it, the instructions of how it works, and then you can drop any text in there. And the great thing is any size text, like any amount of text, you can put an entire ebook in there if you want, like a, you know, 300-500 pages, doesn't matter. And you could just burn through stuff. And it's amazing how if you read it really fast, like abnormally fast to the point where you couldn't even really understand it, like 500-800 words a minute, burn through it once like that, and then read it through again at about a 400 word per minute, and so much more of the information that's on there will stick in your noodle like you couldn't believe, like you have amazing retention with it. So try it, and all proceeds from doing this go to me buying a new car. No, I told you I wasn't affiliated with it. Stop the accusations. I've got nothing to do with it. I'm just trying to help you out. This is a tool you can use, and it's fun. But don't use it for, you know, pleasure fiction, if anybody still reads that. Is that still a thing? I think that's going away with newspapers. I don't want to frighten Stephen King, although I certainly owe it to him over the years. But the novel seems to be disappearing. People are reading Facebook and Twitter bursts and, you know, whatever is quickly on the net. And these newspapers, oh my God, the newspapers that they put out now that are distilled versions of equally inefficient newspapers. This is also part of a conspiracy query, I have to say. You know what? I didn't even know this was going to come up today. I didn't even plan for this. This is like a bonus topic right here, is the commuter papers, they call them. Because you're on your way to work, you've only got so much time. Oh my God, I got 20 minutes, I got to read the paper. And it's not like you're sitting down with, you know, the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. This thing's like, I'm sure they have them in your community. I don't know where you live. You seem to be reticent to tell me. But where I live in Toronto, they have several, they have one called Metro. That's probably the most learned of the bunch. They have something that the Sun Corporation puts out, the Quebecor Corporation, called 24, which is an allusion to how many hours there are in the day. But I think it's more accurately how many truthful statements are in the entire paper. 24. And there's another one called Kleenex box. I don't know what the hell it is, but they put in like a 3 or 5 line version of the story. Like, today the mayor of Toronto was a bad man. Other people say no. That's the end of the story. So it's really in depth. And I think there's an effort, no doubt an effort coming from somebody's good idea to take the news stories into headlines, truncate them down into tiny little things, and then have people think they're well-informed. And they're just garbagey papers. And it just, you know, it's fish wrap, Mum. It's fish wrap. Go down to local chip shop and wrap it up in fish. They don't even do that anymore because we don't have as much of those. You're not allowed to use newspaper for that even. It's not fit. All the news that's fit to seep oil into from your battered cod. or in my case... Well, I don't eat fish anyway, especially lately. Now that they are mercury and what is it? Fukushima filters. That's what fish is. So enjoy that. You know, the Simpsons three-headed fish deal. That's all real now. That was a joke when the Simpsons came out, and now it's actually happening. And Homer Simpson really is running the nuclear plants. Anyhow. We cast Sunstein, and we were moving on to another topic, and I said you were going to have a bonus topic, and it turns out you're not going to have a bonus topic, because we're pretty much running out of time. So I'm going to give you a little teaser instead of what's on the next conspiracy queries. I'm going to look at the 10th anniversary of Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm going to get that done in a half an hour. Does that seem ludicrous to cover the entire? I think I can do it in less than that. And we're also going to look at CPAC's Phyllis Schlafly. It's a very uncomfortable name. And when you get to listen to her speak, you'll know why. And she's a very white, papery, thin, ancient lady with horrific Mason-Dixon line beliefs, who went on the CPAC meeting last week, I believe it was, and for some strange reason, along with spouting off her nonsense, which we will have so much fun dissecting, she painted her face orange. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe she has Mitt Romney's Latino makeup guy helping her out. I'm not sure. All right, so this episode is wrapping it up. I'm sorry for only keeping to the two. I said I was going to bring in a third topic, and I kind of got off on a rail there. And I blame Twitter and Facebook. I blame that for my shorter attention span. What did he say? I blame that it's harder to keep things focused, especially in a free form deal such as a podcast. That's very crazy. But I will leave you with this bit of a teaser. I'm going to be speaking about a politician who just a few years ago, a rebel politician, just a few years ago said that the Afghanistan war is unwinnable. Now, who is this loser that isn't supporting our troops? Well, I will save that for the next episode, and I will thank you for listening to this one. And hopefully you're starting to get the feel of this thing quicker than I am. If you figure it out, email me at conspiracyqueries.com. What is it? No, that's the website. Yes, conspiracyqueries.com is the website, and conspiracyqueries@gmail.com is the gmail.com. So that's how you can send me a letter. Or if you want to send a letter old school, snail mail, if you want to do that with a stamp and lick it and put things on an envelope, you're probably not listening to a podcast. So with that, I will sign off. I will, again, thank you for listening. It's very hopeful to me and flattering that you do. And I'm looking forward to your feedback on these broadcasts. Thanks for listening.